the movement will continue to move forward. The 25th anniversary will be, you know, will be an important moment again, first and foremost, to commemorate and remember those who were killed and the millions who have died since in the wars that 9/11 spawned. If something doesn't derail it this year, like last year, I think it will be a moment where the cause will be amplified and will grow.
You're listening to the Corbett Report.
Welcome back, friends. Welcome back. James Corbett here, CorbettReport.com, coming to you in September of 2026. And if you've done your math correctly, that must mean we are on the cusp of the 25th anniversary of the false flag events of 9/11/2001, something that my well-informed listeners will be in a situation to know something about. So yes, as you might guess, there are going to be some 25th anniversary commemorations, of course, in the mainstream world, but also some movement in the 9/11 truth world. And in order to talk about that, I wanted to bring on someone who is very much involved with a very special event that is going to be held around the 9/11 anniversary weekend. That is specifically Ted Walter, who you will know, obviously, from our previous conversations as the head of the International Center for 9/11 Justice at IC911.org. But for today's conversation, I want to direct your attention to TurningTheTide911.org. Obviously, that will be linked up in the show notes, along with everything else we're going to be talking about. But this is Turning the Tide, 9/11, 25 years later. It says, join us in New York City or tune in online for 4 days of presentations, discussions, networking, and action dedicated to advancing truth, justice, peace, and accountability 25 years after 9/11. Well, that is a tall order, but let's see how much of that we can get accomplished. And let's bring him on to talk about it. Ted Walter, thank you so much for joining us again today.
Hey, James. Thanks for having me.
This is a very big conference that you are in the midst of planning right now that is going to be taking place. So give us the who, what, where, when, why details of this conference and how it came together.
Sure. Well, the Turning the Tide conference, we had the first conference last year, a year ago in Washington, D.C. And as you wrote about last year, it was a very interesting year in the evolution of the 9/11 truth movement. A lot was happening and a lot of new voices were sort of starting to flock to the cause of 9/11 truth. One of those was Kurt Weldon. We saw Senator Ron Johnson then speak out. Tucker Carlson was becoming increasingly interested. And below that, I just think there is an emerging groundswell. Just kind of in the last few months in the middle of the summer of last year, we decided we really should put on an event to kind of mark this and try to amplify this, what's going on in the movement right now. Clearly there's the Overton window is shifting and we need to do something. And so a bunch of groups got together, held that conference in DC. It was fairly small in scale, but still, I think quite an important moment for the movement. And Senator Ron Johnson was there. Former Congressman Dennis Kucinich was there. Kurt Weldon was there, and many others. And so after that conference, which we felt was like an important step forward for the movement and for all of us involved, we said, let's do the 25th anniversary. And after some discussion, we said, let's do it in New York City. And so that's where we are a year later. I still think we're kind of headed in the direction and the trajectory that we were starting to see a year or two ago. And you know, I think it remains to be seen where this will bring us and where we will get to, whether 9/11 will continue to be, 9/11 truth will continue to gain ground in the way that it has. But this conference is very much, you know, geared towards trying to move that forward and trying to bring even more voices into the mix. For example, Jimmy Dore has been increasingly vocal about 9/11 over the past few years. I saw you were on his show recently talking about October 7th. And so I think it's really important to start to make the connections between the grassroots of the movement and some of the biggest voices that are out there right now promoting the cause of 9/11 truth. So this conference is partly aimed at achieving that. So in a nutshell, that's what it is. And we'll have a few hundred people in New York City and we have about 40 to 50 speakers, a handful of panels, a film, And the list goes on. It's 4 days and, you know, 20 plus hours of programming. So very exciting and a lot to organize.
I can only imagine. I have never organized an event like this, but I can imagine the amount of organization that goes into that. So let's talk about some of the people who will be there speaking at this event. As we say, it's a 4 day conference from Thursday, September 10th until Sunday, September 13th. And so there's going to be, as you say, 50 or so speakers. Tell us about some of the people who are going to be speaking at this event.
Yeah, well, I mentioned Jimmy Dore, and I'll go to some of those big names. But, fundamentally, we have a handful of 9/11 family members who are still seeking truth and justice. And this occasion is very much about remembering their loved ones who were murdered 25 years ago and honoring their struggle and giving them the platform to voice their pain and their determination to see truth and justice. And so that includes Matt Campbell and Bob McElvain, and a few other 9/11 family members will be in attendance, but not speaking. There's also going to be several first responders, people who were there on 9/11, who witnessed explosions or who came very shortly after, people who lost many close friends and so on. And then, you know, sort of the some of the core researchers and advocates in the movement who've been at it for a long time. Richard Gage, who is kind of the other lead co-organizer of the conference, along with the International Center for 9/11 Justice, will of course be there. Many of the other groups, Laura's Committee will be represented. Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth will also have a representative there in Xander Arena. And then along with that, we have some very exciting speakers who are, you know, very friendly or sympathetic or adjacent to the movement, you know, like Jimmy Dore. We have Brett Weinstein, who's also been increasingly vocal in the last year and interviewed Ron Johnson, I think, a year ago about 9/11. And we're very, very happy to welcome Dennis Kucinich back to the conference. He gave an incredibly powerful speech last year. And I know I'm skipping one or two big ones, just blanking, but I think those are the four biggest people. But Chris Martinson, who's become increasingly vocal about 9/11, there's people kind of popping up everywhere. Derek Broz, I think, who's probably a real ally of yours and has been doing incredible work for the last 15 years or so on 9/11 and a host of related issues. We have a very exciting Sunday, although it's shorter, but it's going sort of outside the scope of 9/11 to examine other deep state events and sort of the big picture. And the title of that day is Overcoming the Deep State. And we will also be taking a look at the assassination of Charlie Kirk on the first day of the conference, which is the anniversary of his murder. Mm-hmm. So tying in these other strands into 9/11 and the big picture.
You know, I forgot about that. But yes, last year's conference was kind of marked by the assassination of Charlie Kirk. So that was an interesting derailing of an event there in New York City, right?
It was, yeah, in Washington, and derailing. Oh, wow. I think what was promising to be not just the Turning the Tide conference in D.C., but just it was going to be a powerful moment for the 9/11 Truth Movement, and that really was derailed for everybody. Mm. I omitted one important speaker, which is you, James. You will also be.
yes, we should. But I should immediately clarify, because I've heard from several people, hey, I'm looking forward to seeing you in New York City. Well, unfortunately, no, I will not be there. In the flesh, I will be zooming into the conference. But yes, I will be presenting at the conference as well.
Yeah. And you are one of the few, honorable speakers who are speaking virtually. We really put an emphasis on people that were able to come in person, but we really wanted to make it possible for you to share your thoughts on the 25th anniversary. So yes. Thank you.
And I very much appreciated the invitation. Unfortunately, I'm not going to be able to be there in person, but yes, I will be presenting virtually. A lot of incredibly interesting speakers, some of whom people in the 9/11 truth space will be well familiar with, other people they may not be, but I hope they'll at least check that out, turningthetide911.org, to see about some of the speakers. But in addition to the speakers, there's also going to be some interesting some interesting developments, one of which will be, am I to understand this correctly, the unveiling, the first screening of a new documentary film from Journeyman Pictures?
Yeah, Journeyman is the distributor of it. The name of the film company is The Press and the Public Project, and the director's name is John Kirby. He did the Peter Ketchum film back in whatever, the 2017 or so, about the NIST sort of whistleblower. I worked with him on that, and you know, it was released by Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth. He's done many other projects of sort of outside the 9/11 Truth space. Continue with that, I just want to mention to all of your viewers, most of whom probably are not very close to New York City, that they can watch all of this on Redacted if they go to Redacted's YouTube channel or Rumble. So all 4 days will be live streamed. We had some technical issues last year. It was a real so I just want to say things are going to run, I hope anyway, and I'm pretty confident things are going to run a little smoother this year. We have a very good crew that is an in-house crew that knows the space very well and will be handling the live stream. So So The Responders is a new film that has been like 6 or 7 years in the making, interviewing a handful of first responders who were there on the morning of 9/11, who witnessed explosions and, you know, whose lives were completely changed by that day. And many of them have since then taken different paths to sort of coming to terms with or understanding what it is exactly that they did experience. Some people held on to the interpretation all the way through that they were witness to and involved in an event involving massive explosions, you know, the destruction of buildings by way of explosives. Others kind of perhaps got gaslit into thinking something else, even though that was their initial impression. And so they took a more circuitous journey to then finally coming to terms with what they witnessed. So we meet many different first responders in this film who are at different places in their own journeys of, you know, understanding that day, but all of whom ultimately sort of testify to the truth about how these buildings came down. And also a handful of others who showed up a little bit later, somebody who was there for the collapse of Building 7, and then the McIlvain family, Bob McIlvain and his wife Helen, who lost their son Bobby on 9/11, are also featured in the film. And we're kind of stretching the definition of a responder. So we're also looking at Bob and Helen as responders in terms of actually responding to the situation that they're in, standing up and doing something and raising their voices. And then Chris Gioia, who was a fire commissioner in just outside of New York City, outside of Queens in Franklin Square, New York, who spoke out, you know, back in 2018, 2019, and was a big part of this film. And he's kind of the first person that we started following for this film back in 2018, 2019. So I was involved early on in this film as bringing in, like contacting all these first responders. I'd been studying these people's accounts, eyewitness accounts, for years and very familiar with their words. And it was time for me to start actually contacting them, because I also wanted them to testify. This is a whole other project, but to testify for the potential inquest in the UK into the death of Jeff Campbell, that the Campbell family is still trying to get reopened. And so I started, it was sort of a hitting two birds with one stone, trying to find first responders who would testify for that and also be in this film. And so it took a while since then. You know, a lot of the interviews were in 2020 and 2021, but you know, some years later, here we are. We have what is really a beautiful film that I'm very, very proud of. And you know, I commend John and John Kirby and his team for like just doing an incredible job editing the film and the music and everything. So I think I think here the story is beyond the obvious truth of how these buildings were brought down and it really gets a lot into the propaganda of 9/11 as well, and just how blitzed people were in those years after 9/11. But I think John's hope and all of our hope is that this film it's yet another slingshot that, but maybe the slingshot can go further within, you know, among people that haven't really started to question and sort of give them the moral permission to really start questioning it seriously if they listen to the victims, if they listen to these people seriously and what they have to say. So
it's always been my contention that the one thing that everyone can agree on, whether in the 9/11 truth movement or not, is that the first responders were absolute heroes of that day and willing to sacrifice their lives. And many of them did in order to help others that day. They should be honored and commemorated. And when they have firsthand experiential testimony about what they actually witnessed that day, it should be taken very seriously by everyone. And on that note, again, not only Bob McElveen and Matt Campbell will be there to talk at the conference, but also the aforementioned Fire Commissioner Chris Gioia will be there as a speaker. So I'm very much interested in that. For people who are interested, the trailer is now up on YouTube. I'll link to that for people who want to see that. But if they want to see the full premiere of the film itself, well, I guess get a ticket to Turning the Tide 9/11. Let's talk about a couple of other aspects of this. One, you mentioned in passing the Campbell inquest. So perhaps we should, for people who don't know about that, just inform them about what that is.
Yeah, so Matt Campbell, he lost his brother Jeff on 9/11, his younger brother by like a year. And he has been, you know, very active in the last 10 years or so trying to reopen the inquest into his brother's death. So there was an inquest finally held for his brother and nine other British victims of 9/11 in the UK in 2013. And it was sort of a very quick open shut rubber stamp job of the official story. And Matt, very soon after, started looking into how he could, like, seeing what the official explanation was for the cause of his brother's death, and deciding that he wanted to challenge that and have a new proper inquest. Because the idea of an inquest is that the coroner, which is in the U.S. and in the UK, a coroner is a judicial official, not necessarily like a medical examiner, but a judicial official who investigates the proximate cause of someone's, unnatural killing or unnatural death. And so it's not necessarily to apportion blame, but to look into what actually brought about this person's death. And so Matt and his family, his entire family, are trying to get a new inquest and ultimately establish that the true cause of Jeff's death was that the North Tower was brought down by explosive demolition. And so they've been now on this journey for 5 years. They submitted their petition. I'm not going to go into all the details, but Matt has the new inquest has been denied by the Attorney General for England and Wales. And so they've challenged that decision, the legality of it. And they now have gone all the way to the UK Supreme Court on a particular legal issue of whether you're even allowed to challenge the Attorney General's decision, or is it sort of above the law? And so Matt has a hearing before the UK Supreme Court in October. And if he gets that, I think it really paves the way to actually finally getting this inquest and being able to prove in a court of law how his brother really died. And we're quite optimistic at this point. I mean, I don't want to completely go overboard in my optimism, but there's a lot of signs pointing to that the British legal system is ready to evolve from this idea that the Attorney General should not be subject to judicial review, that the Attorney General's legal decisions should be above the law. And we hope and we think that the UK, that the UK Supreme Court is going to rule that way. And then that paves the way for Matt to actually challenge the actual decision and show that it was unlawful for the Attorney General to deny the new inquest. So that Matt will be speaking on the first day of the conference on September 10th. He will be, he'll be going right after Niels Herit, who's going to give his definitive presentation on a complete theory of how the Twin Towers were brought down. I mean, a lot of us are familiar with that evidence right now, but we hear that evidence in sort of scattered bits, or we like to fixate on one piece or another. And I think Niels has a very eloquent, complete, sophisticated way of describing how the towers were brought down in a systematically. So that's going to be happening as well that night. So that's the story about the Campbell inquest.
Excellent. And there is something else that is going to be taking place actually before the conference. My understanding is on September 8th, you are going to be releasing the outline of a report that you've been working on along with many other people. Tell us about that report and what outline people will be able to see next week.
Yeah. So as probably many of your viewers will be aware of or remember, last year, Senator Ron Johnson, who, as I mentioned before, started to speak out about 9/11 during the course of last year, on the anniversary last year at our Turning the Tide conference, he basically, promised to at least give the opportunity for his committee, which he's the chair of the Permanent Subcommittee on Investigations in the U.S. Senate, for his committee to be used as a platform for the evidence, 9/11, real 9/11 evidence to be presented, and for the 9/11 truth movement to like lay down its case that first and foremost, the Twin Towers and Building 7 were destroyed by controlled demolition. And overall that the official story of 9/11 is false and that 9/11 was some sort of a military intelligence operation and a false flag attack. And so we took him up on that offer, of course. You know, over the course of the past year, we put together, and when I say we, I'm speaking about myself and others at the International Center for 9/11 Justice, together with Richard Gage, and then a handful of other researchers, folks at Firefighters for 9/11 Truth, and researchers in the movement, a group to start working on a report and for Ron Johnson, because essentially what he asked us to do was compile the best evidence that the 9/11 Truth movement has developed over the past quarter century, and then we can present that in his committee. So we kind of made a decision pretty early on that we like Ron Johnson a lot, but we're not necessarily going to, you know, we're not just going to do this as an exercise to like see if we can get him, give him good enough evidence or whatever that he will be satisfied and decide to hold a hearing or a series of hearings on 9/11. We're going to go kind of all in and try to do a very expansive report, because we feel that at this point, 25 years after 9/11, it is time that we kind of start putting all the pieces together as best as we can in a single report, and not just say focus on controlled demolition, which by and large, most of the movement agrees on, or not just focus on sort of the simplest things. And so the report that we put together, it's probably going to be on the order of 1,000 pages when it's done and when we release it, hopefully in the next few months. We really want to get it done by the end of the year. But, you know, covering sort of the range of anomalies and problems with the official story. And I have to say, at IC911, we took this on in the last couple of years. We really wanted to start to develop a more coherent understanding of what happened in the skies, what happened with the four purported hijackings, what happened with what was going on with the alleged hijackers, not necessarily to try to come up with some definitive explanation of did a plane hit the Pentagon or not, but to kind of like actually at a higher level, refute the official story of the alleged hijackings, of the idea that these 19 alleged hijackers actually took over these planes and flew them, if indeed that's where the evidence pointed. And, you know, I think many of your viewers will not be surprised to hear that's where our research has taken us, of course, like that these events in the skies, these, you know, the story of the hijackings and so on, doesn't make sense, doesn't add up. And so the report goes into that. We've also brought in a couple of people who've done incredible research into what U.S. intelligence and allied intelligence agencies knew about the alleged hijackers prior to 9/11. That is going to be meticulously documented in our report. And I think, and very eye-opening, even for most people in the 9/11 Truth Movement who, you know, like, but I think we'll, I also think one of the things that I hope happened as a result of this report is that it really puts to bed for anybody who's paying any attention at all, and I think a lot more people are paying attention, that it really will put to bed any idea that of a LIHOP type of event where they were just watching and hope, you know, letting the quote unquote letting this thing happen, not doing anything. And I think that there's a general like illogical and incoherent idea out there, even by people who are starting to accept the idea that the buildings were brought down, was that still that somehow the alleged hijackers did the things that they're purported to have done. And so it's like this hybrid, we're gonna blow up these buildings once these guys succeed in hijacking these planes and flying them into these targets, then we're gonna bring the buildings down. That doesn't make a lot of sense. And I think between the evidence that we are compiling on the intelligence awareness of and support for the alleged hijackers, and then the other errors I'm talking about what actually happened with the hijacking events and so on, and could these alleged hijackers, do the routes that were flown actually look like they would be flown by human beings or not? Those are some of the things we'll be looking at. And lastly, I want to say that one of these researchers, and I'll say his name because he's going to be speaking next week at the conference, his name is Alan Merrill, has done incredible work and really digging into hundreds, if not thousands, of FBI 302s and other documents to essentially assess that there is very little evidence, very, very weak evidence that any of the four, in particular, the four alleged pilot hijackers boarded the four planes on 9/11. And that, as well as, you know, say five or six of the so-called muscle hijackers, he does find actually somewhat credible evidence that some of the alleged hijackers may have boarded some of the planes, at least checked in or went through security or boarded in certain instances. But there's quite compelling evidence through the absence of evidence and through the difficulty that the 9/11 Commission had in establishing real evidence that any of these guys did any of these things, or any of them boarded the planes or even checked in, that actually the four pilot hijackers did not board the planes. And so that is going to be meticulously documented in this report. And I hope we'll, again, start to move the conversation in a more coherent and logical direction.
I am very much anticipating this report. It's, I understand, going to be called the 9/11 Truth and Accountability Report. So just to clarify, the outline will be released for the public next week, September 8th. Yep. And then the full report will be available hopefully by before the end of the year, right?
Yes, that is our goal indeed. We'll do our best. It's going to be 1,000 pages or more, but we'll, the clock is ticking. We want to keep this thing moving forward. So,
well, I can imagine what an incredible undertaking this is. And that will be available at ic911.org.
It'll be available at ic911. Yeah. I mean, we're going to probably make a special website as well, but it'll be available on ic911 and all of our partners working on the report: Firefighters for 9/11 Truth, Richard Gage, 9/11, et cetera. But I think we're going to make a central hub for it. The outline you can find on ICE 901 and Richard Gage 911. Heck, we'll post it on Turning the Tide as well. You know, why not? So Turning the Tide 911.org.
All right. So,
and you can publish it, James.
We are getting to, I mean, there's some definite momentum behind 9/11 Truth at this point, but I was actually just on a recent conversation about the 25th anniversary, and the point was raised, and I think it is a good point. Yes, of course, there's a lot of mainstream attention on 9/11 for the first time in a while, because it's a nice round number anniversary. Oh, the 25th, it's a big deal. So obviously there is some momentum behind it just from the mainstream perspective, which hopefully 9/11 Truth can take advantage of. But having said that, if and when the 25th anniversary comes and goes and the mainstream attention drifts elsewhere, what then? I mean, are we putting all eggs in a basket on 25th anniversary, or where do we go as a movement from here?
The movement will continue to move forward. The 25th anniversary will be, will be an important moment, again, first and foremost, to commemorate and remember those who were killed and the millions who have died since in the wars that 9/11 spawned. And I think it will be, something doesn't derail it this year, like last year, I think it will be a moment where the cause will be amplified and will grow. But then it will continue to grow afterwards, I think. And that, I think in a way we're fortunate that this, I mean, just for our little nook of the whole, of this, even of this movement and of the world, that we have our report to look forward to, and whatever happens with Ron Johnson, and what he is able to do, it remains to be seen whether he will still be the chair of his committee come next January, whether his party holds on to control of the Senate, whether he'll become the ranking member and what he can do as ranking member. But even in that scenario, I think there's a fair amount he could do. But that's just one arena. There are many arenas. And I think the arena that matters most, which is the arena of public opinion and, social media and alternative media, we have been making unprecedented strides, very much in part thanks to your work, James, that you've been doing relentlessly for the past 20 years.
Well, I appreciate that, and I very much look forward to seeing this movement growing, because 25 years on, it is time. It is time to start putting these pieces together, absolutely. So, as part of that, the first step towards that, I suggest people take a look at the Turning the Tide website. Once again, give people the URL and tell people how they can get tickets.
Yeah, so Turning the Tide, turningthetide911.org. And you'll see buttons all over the website to buy tickets, and you go to Eventbrite. Many options. You can go for the full 4 days. Or you can go for a single day. And we just put on sale tickets for Saturday night, which features Jimmy Dore, Chris Martinson, 9/11 survivor and hero William Rodriguez, and others. So, or the entire day. I mean, if you can make it on the Saturday, I think it's gonna be a special day. The theme of the day is 9/11 Truth Then and Now. And so the first part of the day, we'll be looking back at the early history of the 9/11 Truth movement. And then throughout the day, we sort of, move forward into the present. And then, we look at the work that I've been talking about, the 9/11 Truth and Accountability Report. And then we move on to the evening, which should be relatively fun with, Jimmy Dore and the like. So that's going to be a really special day. I just have to say, we put a lot of thought into what every day would be and how every day would be distinct. And so take a look on the website, And yes, if you can't make it to New York City, please, tune in via Redacted. Please make a donation, even if you can't come. Make a donation to help make this thing possible. It's quite expensive to try to get 40 to 50 people, speakers and so on together, and everything else that you have to deal with. So please do make a donation to make this conference possible. If you plan on participating, watching in any way, we could use your support. So, yeah. All right. And I want to say, James, you've said, like, I think this movement is continuing to grow, believe it or not. I wouldn't have necessarily gambled on that 5 or 6 years ago, but I think something changed. And I think COVID had a lot to do with it. I think Gaza had a lot to do with it. Something has changed and the movement is continuing to grow. I'm starting to think right now that we are just at, and I may talk about this next week, that we are at the end of the beginning. We are just finishing the end of the beginning, and we'll see what happens next as we get into the middle act of this mission.
A nice, positive, optimistic note to end this conversation on, and hopefully many more conversations in the future about continuing success. So, Ted Walter, thank you very much for putting this conference together. I'm going to be looking forward to speaking at it telephonically, visually,
yes.
not in person. But at any rate, thank you again for this. And all of the links to everything we've talked about will be in the show notes. So Ted Walter, good luck on the conference.
Thanks so much, James. I look forward to seeing you there.
We all know the story of Osama bin Laden and Al-Qaeda.
Bin Laden was responsible for today's attack.
So often was that story repeated in the wake of 9/11 that the hypnotized public forgot that it was, at base, just that. A story.
If they didn't have an Osama bin Laden out there, they'd invent one.
In False Flags, The Secret History of Al-Qaeda, you will learn the truth behind that story and uncover the lies that led to the War of Terror.
Our war on terror begins with Al-Qaeda, but it does not end there.
Watch the documentary for free at CorbettReport.com/Al-Qaeda or support the filmmaker and purchase the documentary on DVD at NewWorldNextWeek.com.